This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Episode number 97. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And I just realized that we are getting very close to episode 100.
I know.
And we haven't even really thought about it or talked about it because we've been so busy with the video show.
I know. This is going to be a summer of awesome.
Oh, man.
For Sword and Laser. We're going to have our 100th audio episode. We're going to be calling it an audio episode because we're also going to have video episodes.
And well, it's going to be before this summer.
Yeah, I mean, I know. Actually,
in three episodes. It's going to be in like a month.
It will technically be spring. You're right.
Oh, my goodness. That's so exciting. We'll have to figure out something special to do.
It's part of the mid-year of awesome.
Yes.
As I will call it.
Well, if you guys can help us think of something to do to commemorate our 100th episode, that'd be awesome. Maybe we'll, I don't know, have a party?
Every episode's a party.
Every episode's a party. Yes. Speaking of which, what are we drinking? What are you drinking this evening?
I am having a Panalanco Reserve Viñedo Smarchigui.
Okay.
Which is probably not pronounced right, but it's a Merlot Malbec blend. I couldn't find it on cellartracker.com. I can only find the 2010 version. I'm having the 2011 version, which is probably way too young to drink. But then wine like this, I don't know.
It doesn't always matter.
Some wines are meant to be drunk right away. It's really fruity.
Drunk.
But it's all right.
Drank. I'm drinking a 2006 Bruno Rocca Barbaresco, which I think I was drinking last week.
I can check on that for
That is
you,
not a way you should be drinking
exactly
good
what
wine.
Okay. I was drinking water last week.
Well,
so
anyway.
I'm back.
All right, well, let's move on to the actual show with the quick burns.
So the old Harry Potter ebook is finally out. And of course, immediately there were all these complaints about the site being down because it was crushed under the weight of all of the Harry Potter seekers. But J.K. Rowling, in I think very wise style, controlling the series of ebooks directly through the Pottermore website, but you can get them for Kindle. However, if you buy them for Kindle or Nook or all the other platforms, you can download the books directly through your account and to your device, but then you still own it. So if you go switch from Kindle to Nook, you can go get it in the Nook once you've paid for it. I think that is brilliant.
Yeah, EPUB is great like that. So that's very exciting. That's very smart. I'm glad that she's the kind of woman that wants full control over her IP at this point. So I don't blame her. So yeah, it's available for any device, as you said, that's compatible with EPUB. So iOS, Android, Kindle, Nook, and basically everything else that claims to call itself an ebook reader should play EPUB.
Now they are pricey. This is the big issue. $30 each for the first three titles. $44.90.
That's not. It says the first.
Oh, I'm looking at the audiobook prices. Okay, I'm looking. The audiobooks are pricey. $29.99 each for the first three titles. $44.99 each for the other four.
That's not that far off.
But you can get the audiobooks now as well.
That's not that far off from
it's,
Audible
it's not
stuff
that
without
much more expensive,
credits.
Right? I was thinking those were the EPUB book prices. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Ebook prices are $7.99 to $9.99, depending on the title.
Yeah, I wonder why the earlier ones are cheaper and the later ones are more expensive.
Because once she's got you, she knows she can charge you.
She should have done it book two then.
I know, right?
$15 for book
Might
two.
As well.
$17 for book three.
I do like the fact that J.K. Rowling is saying, I am in control of these books. Mm-hmm. So you buy them from me. And yes, but you can still have the convenience if you're a Kindle or a Nook user of downloading it through your Nook account, right? Mm-hmm. But I am the author. I like that. I'm good. Good job, J.K. And so, I'm not JKing when I say that.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
So then there's this other post on Boing Boing on sci-fi and technology. And this is a sci-tech history researcher, Dr. Jolene Zepchevsky.
I don't know.
Was quoted about much science fiction. What? That's not a proper sentence. Quoted by Jerry Hsu on why much science fiction is as interesting for the technologies abandoned as those newly invented. Okay.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. If you just read the highlighted part, it does not make sense.
And like speaking directly to Hunger Games, where there people have complained, they're like, well, if they've got all this technology, why are they taking trains? Points out that there's no reason why a new society rising from the ashes of an old society would necessarily reinvent all the same technologies. And again, pointing out here, a decade ago, you could fly to London to New York in a couple of hours. You can't do that anymore. Concords mm-hmm. don't fly. And a year ago, the United States had a reusable spacecraft. We don't do that anymore. It's all rockets again. So we've actually gone backwards in a few areas.
In a few areas, yeah. But there's also other considerations to take into account, like safety, for example, with the Concorde or fuel costs,
right.
You know, and money being spent on other public programs.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's always something. But it bums me out, though, because you think that as a society, we're always going to move forward to the next best thing. But sometimes we can't.
Well, and that's the point, right, mm-hmm. is in the Hunger Games, there are probably similar reasons why they're not just flying everywhere, even though they have some flying things, why they haven't invented all of the same technology
right.
that we know now, even though it supposedly is our world long in the future.
Well, for one, those trains look pretty badass.
Who wouldn't want to ride on a sweet train like that? I want to eat on that train.
Yeah, I think anyone would want to eat on that train. We haven't talked about the movie much. We both saw the movie, and this is not meant to be a young adult discussion today. It just so happens that we're talking about Harry Potter and Hunger Games up first.
Sure.
We don't usually stray too much into the YA discussion territory, but I guess we should save this for another time.
Well, we could talk about it in TV and movies.
All right. Yeah, we'll get back to it. Okay.
Make a note.
Make a mental note.
Because we read the Hunger Games as a selection for the mm-hmm. Sword and Laser Book Club for anybody who's new. Welcome all you newbies. But we should talk about what we thought of that movie in relation to the book
a little bit
later on. No. Meanwhile, on io9, there is a intriguingly titled article called Could the Amazon Kindle mm-hmm. Revitalize Science Fiction? And it's talking about a lot of the best-selling Kindle science fiction books are authors who've never appeared on another science fiction bestseller list, say Locus magazines. These are self-published or tiny presses, mm-hmm. and some of them are even entirely free. The Kindle seems to have opened up opportunities for a lot of authors who would never have gotten a shot.
Oh, this is so absolutely true, too, because I can even speak from my own experience that the whole reason I started reading Naomi Novik in the Temeraire series was because the first book in that series was available on Kindle for free. And I saw it on the Kindle homepage. And I said, oh, that sounds interesting. That sounds like something I would enjoy reading. And so I bought it. And then, of course, I went on to buy the rest of the series. So I have seen this happen to myself a couple of times. And it's so easy for people to self-publish on Amazon these days that it makes total sense that their works are being seen by a large audience because of that low barrier to entry.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. And as a self-published author of my own, I don't do enough to promote my stuff to really make a good report of how this works. But I do know that a lot of people that I know out there, people I've emailed with, people like Christian Cantrell, for instance, making very good use of this sort of thing. And it has opened up the possibilities. For instance, just from my own experience, I would probably not be putting my book out there. I probably wouldn't even bother like trying to find an agent or anything like that because I just don't have time. But because I have self-publishing, I can just throw it out there, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people who are more energetic and more devoted to pushing their works now have an avenue that gives them quality publishing, gives them quality distribution, and even quality promotional tools all in one place. And I think that's both a positive and a negative with Amazon, right? It's mm-hmm. giving a voice to a lot of authors that wouldn't get a voice otherwise, which is great. Some of them aren't going to be very good, but a lot of folks that are very good that would get overlooked are going to be available, like Naomi Novik.
And
but on the other hand,
go ahead.
is it all tied into Amazon too much?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the point. I mean, maybe this is happening on other ebook platforms as well. I'm not sure. I would assume that there's some kind of spillover for that. But there's also the social aspect. You know, you get recommended books based on what other people that bought the book you just bought also bought. Did that make sense?
And so that, exactly. So, right. It's that classic Amazon, like, other people who bought these socks also bought the shampoo. It works for science fiction much better when it's like, hey, people who liked this Dresden Files book also bought this book you've never heard of from an author you've never heard of.
Right.
Because it's all part of the same milieu.
Also, sidebar, I love looking at the stuff other people have bought for the things I've bought. How come so often they buy the thing and then they buy an exact same thing that's very similar but by someone else?
Maybe they buy it as a gift.
Or maybe they buy it and they buy two of different things that are similar so they can return one if they don't like it as much.
Maybe that's it. That's
I think
it might be the algorithm messing up, actually.
I don't think so. I trust the algorithm implicitly.
Always trust the algorithm.
Trust the algorithm. Trust the algorithm. Anyway, let's talk about John Hodgman and Rob Reed, who are also talking about Rob's book, Year Zero. And apparently Hodgman is going to be narrating the audiobook, which is phenomenal because Hodgman is a great narrator.
Well, let's talk a little bit of Ken Fisher, too, who on Ars Technica, a fantastic technology news site, wrote a very hilarious story about Rob Reed's Year Zero, which is about aliens and copyright. It's due out in July, July 10th, I think. And the fact that John Hodgman is going to be reading it led him to ask John Hodgman some questions. But the questions are, why is there no extant technology, indeed not even your own particular inventions, that can read and record this work for you, surpassing both your soothing but organically limited voice and your stamina? To which Hodgman wrote back, of course, there are many programs now that can read electronic books aloud to those who are impaired or simply too lazy to read, but none of them are quite so robotic and soulless as I am. Mm. It's takes the opposite tack. He's like, you know, robots just can't, they sound too human. They sound too frail.
Oh, gosh. I love listening to Hodgman read things, so I might have to do the audiobook version of this book.
I'm torn, actually, because I want to read this in text. And we should definitely try to get Rob Reed on the show, either video or audio.
Absolutely. And so for those of you who don't know, Rob also was the founder of Rhapsody. So he knows a thing or two about music and pirating.
And if you're tapping your head like, wait, I think I've heard that recently, he did that 5-minute TED talk about copyright numbers.
Yes, copyright math.
You may have heard of copyright numbers, copyright math. Thank you. You may have heard of him from that as well.
Very, very cool. All right, so we should pick up with the calendar and talk about some of the books that are coming out in the next couple of weeks. And there's some good ones. I think we've covered a lot of them recently. Of course, our first interviewee on the video show will be Scott Stigler. His book, Nocturnal, is coming out on the 3rd, which is on Tuesday of this week, which you may be listening to this show on. So that is, of course, the thriller, I would call it, about a something mysterious living underneath the streets of San Francisco. And it's a mystery about trying to figure out that there's a subculture involved about its own myths, its own legends, and I'm excited to read it and a little scared, actually.
The Road of Danger, Lieutenant Leary by David Drake, also comes out tomorrow, or today, if you're listening on April 3rd. Mm-hmm. It is number 9 in the best-selling RCN Space Adventure series. Captain Daniel Leary with his friend and spy, Officer Adele Munday, gets sent to a sector to carry out an easy task, put down a coup. But a jealous admiral gets rid of them by sending them off on a wild goose chase to a sector where commerce is king and business is carried out by extortion and gunfights.
And also, I don't know if we've talked about this one before. Banner of the Damned by Sherwood Smith. Princess Lazva is about to be named heir to her childless sister, the queen. But when the queen finally bears an heir, Lazva, her future is shattered. Grief-stricken, she leaves her country of Kolend and falls into the arms of Prince Ivandred of Harlovin Hesea. His people are utterly different with their expertise in riding, weaponry, and magic. And the tunes. Oh, right. We did talk about this one because we said, and the two soon marry. Worst description of a book ever because they just totally gave away the ending.
Spoiler. April 24th, so a little farther down the road, a couple Tuesdays from now, The Wind Through the Keyhole, Dark Tower novel by Stephen King, comes out. This is Roland Deschain, Midworld's last gunslinger, in his early days. So this is not continuing the saga, which if you've read all the way through, you know would be rather problematic. But this is in the years following his mother's death. He's sent by his father to investigate evidence of a murderous shapeshifter, Skin Man.
Ooh.
He takes charge of Bill Streeter, a brave but terrified boy who is the sole surviving witness of the beast's most recent slaughter. Roland starts telling him a story from the Book of Eld that his mother used to read him at bedtime. So you get a little bit of Roland's early days story, but it also you get a story from the Book of Eld.
Very cool. And now tell me about this Star Trek series that you seemingly are so entranced by.
Yeah, we don't usually do like the Star Trek or Star Wars or Halo series because there's so many of them in the calendar anyway. But Luxley and Dolmer are the temporal investigations folks, and Luxley and Dolmer, Mulder and Scully, they're anagrams for that. Anyway, it's a story based on them, and it has James T. Kirk because he's like the worst as far as temporal violations. So it's called Forgotten History. To the agent's shock, the ship at the heart of the anomaly has a warp signature that matches the Federation Starship Enterprise NCC-1701. Take it from there. You can figure out the rest.
Timothy Zahn would never let that stand. I'm just saying.
Luxley and Dolmer? That's from Deep Space Nine.
That was their names on Deep Space Nine? They were characters on Deep Space Nine? I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. They came to investigate when Commander Sisko went back in time by accident to the Star Trek Enterprise with the Tribbles.
Oh, I do remember that episode.
They're ones that interviewing him at the beginning of that episode.
I love crossovers. Actually, the first comic book I ever bought was the DS9 Next Generation crossover issue.
Oh, yeah.
It was a four-parter, and they all had different... It was great.
That Tribbles episode on Deep Space Nine is fantastic.
It's really funny.
Watch it again. It really holds up. Yeah.
Oh, I would like to watch that series over again.
How many seasons of DS9 were there? On Netflix. There were 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine.
That's a good amount. Yeah. That's a good amount. All right, well, let's get him out of there.
Oh, don't forget Rage of the Dragon by Margaret Weiss and Tracy, also coming out April 24th.
Okay, should we talk about that one?
What up? Primal Dragons forged during the creation.
This actually looks interesting to me because it has dragons, so that's automatically interesting to me. But Dragon Ships of Vindras, it sounds to me already like some kind of Dragon Riders / Temeraire / Live Ship Traders mashup.
Well, Weiss and Hickman have been doing this for a long time, so you could argue
stupid
that
laundry. I'm sorry, my laundry.
Temeraire is mashing up Weiss and Hickman, and McCaffrey, and all that stuff. But yeah, it does seem like it's probably in that same vein.
I have to balance my domesticality, Tom, with my more thoughtful pursuits, my more podcasty pursuits. So if you occasionally hear my laundry going off in the background of the episode,
I didn't hear it. I don't know if the audience did.
Oh, they absolutely will, because it was very loud.
Eileen was banging something in the other room, like chopping meat or something.
When you said that, I just thought of her with like a giant butcher's knife and like a big bloody apron.
She just went, I'm sorry.
Why is it still going off? Shut up. God.
Don't worry about it. Let's bear swords.
I'm so ready for the singularity. Okay. What books would you recommend to someone scared of the genre?
Good question.
This is a very good question. This thread comes to us over on the Goodreads forums from Robert.
Memoirs found in a bathtub.
Lemmed.
Not be on that list.
Robert says, for some people, I'm sure we all know many, the words science fiction and fantasy are a complete turnoff, and in some extreme circumstances, a visible look of dread can be witnessed. What books from the genres would you recommend to these people to at least get them to reconsider their initial recoil? I'm going to give this a think today, but these are the titles which came to mind first for sci-fi. 1984 and Fahrenheit 451. Fantasy, The King of Elfland's Daughter, and Guards. That's Terry Pratchett, right? That's Terry Pratchett.
Oh, that's Pratchett. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I don't know about 1984. It's a little bit high school English class for people who are scared. They mm-hmm. might think, oh, I had to read that when I was a junior. Mm-hmm. And Fahrenheit 451 could be the same way. But 1984 is very much a think piece. Fahrenheit 451, I think, is easier to wrap your head around. I often think of Hitchhikers in these sorts of situations because it's funny. But it's also a funny that you have to like. So I don't know if that's a great idea. For sci-fi, I feel like we've had this discussion many times. Arthur C. Clarke. I'd probably go with something from Art Clarke.
Really?
Yeah, and not 2001. That's a little bit high tone, but like Children of the Earth, maybe.
I like some of the suggestions that we have in the thread. Actually,
okay.
Gord says for sci-fi, just about anything recent by Robert J. Sawyer could do the trick. They're very near future as a rule and should be approachable to non-sci-fi fans.
Good point.
I like that idea. Michael Crichton. Warren recommended, kind of a gateway author for sci-fi. Ernie Klein would be funny. If they like thrillers or adventures, Jurassic Park for science buffs, Dune, perhaps. See, Jurassic Park is one of my favorite novels of all time.
Yeah. Dune's a good one. It's a little meaty, but it is one that like kind of sucks people in if it doesn't scare them off.
And
immediately.
Actually, you know, as Kevin says, for the mainstream, Song of Ice and Fire is actually a good place to start because
for fantasy,
because not only is it very much in the public mind right now and people are talking about it and it's kind of cool to read right now because people are really into it. So you have a lot of stuff to talk about with other people who are reading. But also it kind of forgoes a lot of that medieval style talking that so puts a lot of people off from the fantasy genre.
Right.
It's a little more straightforward, a little more postmodern, like a lot of the fantasy we tend to read on in the book club. So I think that might actually be a good one. And then you can follow along with the TV show at the same time, which is always fun.
Neil Gaiman's American Gods, suggested by Dharma Kirti. And I think that is another one that's good kind of across genres. It's fantasy. It's got a little sci-fi. It's superhero comic booky.
And Good Omens is such a funny book.
Oh, Good Omens, fantastic.
From Neil Gaiman, so I would recommend that one because it's definitely fan. I don't really know what genre to put it into, really, because it deals with demons and it deals with angels and there's more of a paranormal element than
it's fantasy-ish.
Fantasy-ish?
Yeah.
Urban fantasy-ish?
Yeah. Maybe. A little elf punk.
But some really good suggestions, so head over to that thread and chime in if you have something that you would suggest.
Our other thread we want to talk about is what do you do when reading? Where Hi says, in bed before you go to sleep, or are you in a car with an audiobook, specific time for 1 hour a day, or whenever you have time, I was just wondering if there were habits I should pick up so I don't lose interest in reading as I usually do.
Well, my problem has been I fall asleep instantly when I try to read in bed. So I've been trying to read other places lately.
I've noticed I'm about halfway through Empire State. I know. It's taken me freaking 3 months to get
that's an earlier halfway. Alternate pick for those of you just joining us.
Yeah. But I have to say, it's keeping me awake now.
That's good.
It's finally getting momentum on that.
That's what I should go back to. All right. Yeah. I've been unlemming other books. Uh-huh. Recently, because I'm listening to The Magicians, which I've already started to get a little head start. And for Vaginal Fantasy, I'm almost done with our pick for the month. So I'm gonna have a little extra reading time coming up soon. So maybe I'll go back to Empire State. I'm also working on The Heroes again.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because I am gonna finish that goddamn book.
That's right. Finish it.
You
finish
betcha.
It up, sister.
You betcha.
I finished it. It's worth it. It is a slog. It's a war. To get through,
it is
worth it in the end. You win that war.
My favorite way to read, I just wanted to quickly say, was this weekend we had a little vacation in Sausalito, and the hotel we were staying at had a wine and cheese happy hour at 5 o'clock every night. And so I would go down there with my Kindle and drink wine and eat cheese. And that is now my favorite way to read a book.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm. I tend to read in the evenings on my way to going to sleep. When I read print books, whether they're paper or Kindle or otherwise. But I read audiobooks mostly when I'm in the car or when I'm doing chores. Like I'm doing vacuuming. Earlier I was folding clothes from the laundry and I was listening to Red Seas, Red Skies, Loch Lomora, Scott Lynch. Mm-hmm. So for audiobooks, I feel like audiobooks have doubled my capacity to read. because all these times when I used to be not listening to anything, I can now listen to audiobooks.
This is funny. Zach says that he drinks energy drinks sometimes when he reads.
Really?
Unless it's before bed, but maybe I should do that before bed so I can stay up and read.
But then
it
keeps you up all night, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And Irene likes to read at coffee houses.
I like that too. Really, I never get to do that. I never have time to actually just go and sit in a coffee house. It's funny. It's one of the things we do on weekends sometimes. Like I'm serious. Christmas, like Thanksgiving, when we actually have a day where like we really don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. There's no chores to run because it's a holiday. We'll go to like a place, like a shopping area. I'll sit at the coffee shop and actually read while Eileen goes and shops and looks around. And
I would totally do that. Fantastic. But none of the coffee shops near me are very comfortable. They're all like those kind of cool, hip, like wooden bar coffee shops where you sit on like a stool and it's not very comfortable. And there's just hipsters everywhere.
What happened to the 90s coffee shops with their comfy chairs?
That's why you got to go to Starbucks. Starbucks still has comfy chairs.
Oh, no, they don't. They have wooden chairs.
No, they totally have comfy chairs.
I don't know what Starbucks you've been going to.
I don't know. I haven't been to one in a while.
Yeah, see?
But I seem to remember comfy chairs. I miss Borders and Barnes & Noble, because that's where I would go
Barnes
to
and Noble,
read.
Barnes & Noble still has several locations. Yeah, Borders gone.
Oh, it makes me sad. Borders was my favorite. Anyhow, some really nice suggestions. I feel like we've had this discussion before, but it's always fun when it comes back around because I always learn some new tidbits about the audience and also, kind of remind myself that I should try some different things, like leaving the house to read, for example.
For instance.
Not trying to read in bed, like reading over breakfast, for example.
You need a comfy, you need a reading chair. That's what you need.
I do have a reading chair, actually.
Oh, well, there you go. So get yourself some wine and some cheese.
Eames Lounge, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that's fun. Thanks for starting that thread. It's always good to catch up with you guys. So should we talk about some TV, movies, and video games? Or rather, should we talk about Game of Thrones?
Well, yeah. So we should save most of our Game of Thrones talk for the end, as we do. People who don't want to hear about it don't have to hear about it. The people who don't want to be spoiled don't want to be spoiled.
Okay.
We should also fulfill our promise and mention what we think of the Hunger Games movie.
I thought it was good. I enjoyed it very much. I thought that it was as true as you could be to the book series without making it completely, unmanageable. I think that Jennifer Lawrence did a really great job. She was believable to me as Katniss. I understand, even though I don't like it, why people were saying that she was a little bit too healthy looking to play that role.
That's what I said. It's like, I think she was fine and I liked her. I think she had the attitude down, but her face is just round. She's not fat. I'm not saying that. And anything wrong with her at all, but her face is just a little round. So when you're trying to portray someone who's been starving, it doesn't look quite right. And I'm sure people with a round face who are starving would look like that.
Well,
she
didn't just have a round face. I mean, she's,
curvy.
She's a curvy girl, which is great. I mean, I love seeing curvy women in. She's not even curvy. She just has a body.
That's
like
what I mean.
Person.
Like she's not angular.
But she was not at all. Like there was no like jutting collarbones or.
I mean,
they should have just taken some kind of traditional starlet and just thrown her in there, and she would have looked totally the part. Just cut off, her face and her acting abilities, and stick her
zero.
On some hideous.
Yeah, but
bony
you know what?
Girl.
Jennifer Lawrence was really good.
She was excellent.
I felt like she was Katniss.
Yes.
So I could get past the fact that it's like, okay, your cheeks are a little round for Katniss. Whatever.
No.
The rest of you is doing great. And I thought they made some great choices with what they kept in the movie and what they left out.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, the more enjoyable parts were kept in. The adventure parts, the combat, the darkness, that was what was kept in. Could have been darker, sure. We were trying to keep it PG-13, and I'm okay with that. But they didn't go the lighthearted route. They didn't pander to the teens. And I think the teens liked it.
Yeah, sometimes they like to be treated like intelligent moviegoers.
Yeah, right? Teens aren't dumb.
So I had a couple of problems. I was a little bit disappointed in the mutant like dogs at the end because it's just spoilery. I guess it's spoiler.
A little spoiler alert if you haven't read The Hunger Games.
A little bit too late. All right. Well, some of the creatures towards the end, they didn't look the way I was expecting them to look based on how they were described in the
book.
I
think that was a smart choice. Well,
it would have been hard to pull
really
off.
Nail it, I it think would have it been looks hard really to pull weird.
Off. Absolutely.
And so I was okay with the, like, okay, I'm a little disappointed because I wanted to see how that mm-hmm. would look, but I'm glad they didn't make it look bad.
Also, I thought Katniss, at least from the audience point of view, fell into the relationship with Peeta a little bit more willingly than I think she was feeling in the book series.
Well, and I think that's because of how fast things move.
She just seemed a little too into it from how it was described, you know, the inner turmoil. I mean, they showed some of it when they would flash back to Gale. And he would, you know, you kind of felt that there was some tension there, but
I think they just didn't have time to show you the turmoil. And so it came off a little bit quick.
Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I thought it was great. You know, there were obviously some changes from the book, with the mayor's daughter being completely absent. I'm still reeling and appalled by the reaction that stupid, awful, racist moviegoers had about Rue. And I can't.
What were the problems with Rue?
You didn't hear about this?
No, Rue was great.
People were upset when they went to the movie and found out that Rue was black.
Oh.
They didn't expect her to be black. In the book? What?
No, I mean,
are you joking?
No, I'm not joking. It's like, I remember her being kind of with curly hair, but.
Well, I mean, she's
brown.
Well, I'm okay. Well, I mean, she's African American. And people were upset that. Obviously, and it's also the way she's described in the book.
Yeah.
And people are racist and stupid, and we're like, oh, I don't care about her as much now that I found out that she's black.
What?
Yeah. I can't believe you missed this. This was huge news.
No, I totally missed that. Yeah, I'm sorry. I want to apologize to the folks of the Goodreads Forum who might have been appalled by my hoodie comment at one point. Because
what was your hoodie comment?
Well, because that whole thing is not top of mind. I know what's going on. But I think it was Turb Christian was like, I don't know about sending a video in for the video show because I don't like the way I look on camera. And I jokingly said, you can be hooded in your video. It's fine. Thinking Jedis and wizards. And so, of course, immediately someone says too soon.
Oh,
because of the whole controversy.
You're
with
so
the hoodies.
Innocent and pure.
Well, no, I'm not. I just, as soon as they said that, I was like, oh, I'm such an idiot. Of course, that's going to be taken that way. I should have thought about that. And then Scott Sigler didn't realize it was me. So he goes on and types this let's not be political thing. And so I think he's joking with me. So I type a snotty response and he's like, oh my God, I didn't realize it was you. I deleted my response. I'm like, oh crap. Well, I deleted my snotty response. Then I put another response up that was like, hey, I didn't think about what that could be interpreted to mean. Sorry, wasn't trying to be political. So,
oh, okay. Well, I think you're okay.
And I missed the whole Rue thing too.
Yeah,
you know, I need to stop reading international news. Like, I'm all up on Mali and Syria, but I know nothing about hoodies and Rue.
There you go. Need to read a little less BBC World and a little more WeSmirch or TMZ.
I need to balance my reading out.
But anyway, overall, I think it was great. I loved Rue's character. I thought she was phenomenal. She was so adorable and such a great actor.
That was a tearful scene.
It was, definitely. So I can't wait for the next movie. I'm excited about it. It really shows what you know, starting with good source material and, you know, having a good director and a good cast, you can make a totally awesome, decent young adult novel into a film.
So,
successfully.
On the Game of Thrones non-spoiler front, HBO has released an extended Game of Thrones world map. Of course, Wartzone, Adam Wirt, always on top. Adam Whitehead, sorry. Always on top of this stuff. And he's got links to the new map. Shows a lot more of the eastern continent of Essos. Doesn't finish the Jade Sea, so we're still not sure if the Jade Sea is actually inland sea or leads to another ocean or not. But it does show Quarth, and it does show some other areas past the Red Waste, which were not included in the HBO maps previously. Mm-hmm. So this is all canon, apparently.
The North doesn't look big enough on this map, but maybe it's cut off.
It's probably the projection they're using is my guess.
Okay.
You know how Greenland looks like way too big in certain projections?
I guess, yes.
IO9, J.E. Fullerton has got a map of the Song of Ice and Fire world that is, in fact, written as if it were in that time. So it's all cartoony and not quite, you know, here there be White Walkers, but that's the idea, right? This would be a map as if it were made at the time.
It does look pretty cutesy.
Yeah. There's a little elephant down past the red face near court.
Yeah, I see it. No, I like that. I like that map. I would like a poster of that map.
And Doran is kind of red.
There you go. That makes sense.
And there's a dragon in the Summer Sea. I don't know if that's true, though.
Well, also in the Game of Thrones world, the companion book has been announced. It's going to be released in the autumn. It's called Inside HBO's Game of Thrones.
Oh, because I was going to say, like, wouldn't you just buy Game of Thrones?
It's a volume that mixes fictional background details with behind-the-scenes information, maps, family trees, and interviews with cast members.
Well, I want this.
I want this. I want this real bad.
So this is like companion material to both Game of Thrones, the HBO, and... It sounds like a little bit to the book.
And it says the book should not be confused with The World of Ice and Fire, an in-universe companion volume to the book series, which will be likely published in 2013.
Oh, wow.
That's
yeah,
because
this
stuff.
Is written by Brian Cogman. He is the guy who's sort of in charge of continuity for the Game of Thrones series. He's written two episodes of the series. Now George R. R. Martin is involved. He writes the preface for the book. So it's not like, you know, somebody's running off without George's oversight, but this is the guy, you know, who's basically like, no, Daenerys doesn't do that at this point. He's keeping track of all that stuff.
And also, the final cover art for The Lands of Ice and Fire has been announced, which is a map companion that shows maps from King's Landing to across the Narrow Sea. So you can see even more in-depth maps.
Too much Game of Thrones goodness. All right, we got to put off. I totally want to talk about the first episode, but we should hold off. And
well, let's do it another time. I mean, I still need to absorb it a little bit more and get some feedbacks in. Yeah,
you leave me hanging. All right, fine.
I mean, I just don't have. There's not that much. It was pretty.
Okay, I'll give you my non-spoilery.
I have really to talk about it right now.
I will give you my non-spoilery summary.
Okay.
Which is to say, I enjoyed the episode very much. I was very excited for it, loved it. It is, of course, the first episode, and it's just telling you where everyone is and what's going on, and I'm dying for things to start happening, and I know they will. So I'm not disappointed in any way, but I'm chomping at the bit.
It was catching us back up, kind of filling us in where everyone is at the moment.
Right. Exactly.
The one thing I noticed, didn't that that Lannister that they were talking, that they were sending back into King's Landing to talk about the ransom, the cousin, didn't he look an awful lot like Gendry? Did you notice that? Ryan and I both noticed how
much.
Didn't
notice that.
Huh?
I didn't notice that, but now that you're mentioning
it. I don't remember. I remembered that character in the book, and I can't remember. There's no reason why he would look like Gendry or Gendry. Yeah. Gendry. The actor looked just like him, and it was really weird. I was like, is he supposed to be another bastard son somewhere? And then the other scene that kind of surprised me in its difference was the scene in, with Stannis, and when they're all, talking about the plans to, lay his claim to the throne, and his, maester goes over and offers Melisandre
the wine.
Yeah. And it didn't happen that way in the book. Exactly.
No, they kind of sped it up.
And it kind of, in a way, it didn't really make sense in this. Well, I guess
I had to explain it to Eileen.
Yeah. I was like, well, I guess in this scene, he's willing to die for if he's going to take her down with him.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen that way in the book. So that was one little shortcut.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited for it. Man, that was a harsh ending to that episode, though. That was hard to watch.
Was
that, you know, all the bastards getting
right. I kind of blocked that out. I honestly, like, I forgot how it ended until you said that. I'm like, oh right, yeah.
But well, that happy note,
yeah.
Should we check in with our book, our upcoming book?
Well, it's not exactly the kickoff, because our official kickoff will be in a week, but April 1st is the beginning of the month, and it's our book for the month. So The Magicians by Lev Grossman is yours to start reading. So get out there and start reading it.
Mm-hmm. I'm already reading it. I'm already really enjoying it. So I think for those of you who haven't read it yet, I'm in book two right now. So I'm more than halfway done.
Yeah. It's
New York right now.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Quentin Coldwater is in Brooklyn. And he is a fan of the Fillory books from his childhood, which are basically kind of Narnia analogs.
Very Narnia-ish, yeah.
And he is going to end up getting sucked into a world of magic.
Not the same world of magic.
It's not the same world of magic to begin with. And it is also not the Harry Potter world of magic. This is like hard. This is what magic school would really be like.
Absolutely.
When this book first came out, we talked about it on Sword and Laser because Cory Doctorow wrote it up on Boing Boing and was like, oh, yeah, if you like Harry Potter, but you want like what really happens in the magic schools, check out Lev Grossman.
I'm excited about this one. And we're going to have Lev on the video show very soon as well.
Yeah, we'll be wrapping up the book in the second video show of April, and then Lev Grossman will be on the show, our first show in May.
Yay! All right, well, that's all we have. If you guys want to get in touch with us, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser. The website, as always, is swordandlaser.com. Goodreads.com is where we have all of our discussions, and you'll be able to find our video show at youtube.com/geekandsundry.
Hit the subscribe button.
Subscribe if you know what's good for you. And also, you may have noticed, but on the Goodreads page, you can also watch our videos right from our homepage.
Oh, look at that. Thank you, Goodreads.
Yay! They made it special for us.
You guys are the best.
And if you want to call and leave a voicemail, the phone number is 415-779-6736. Or 415-7-SWORD-6.
What?
I love that so much. All right, we'll see you guys soon.
Bye.